you got to find your tribe. So whatever level you're at, trust me, if you find other people who are doing what you're doing and you connect with them, whether it's in person or on Slack or wherever, on Teams, whatever group there is out there, your life will be better. Believe me.
Welcome to the Disruptive Innovators, Champions of Digital Business podcast, where IT and digital leaders from around the world talk about their careers, their inspiration, and their vision for the future of digital business. I'm your host, David Wright. The world of digital business is evolving faster than ever, and I want this to be a place where digital business champions create a village to band together and help each other navigate the ever-changing terrain. Disruptive Innovators features conversations with CIOs and digital leaders from around the world, diving into their personal backstory, career, their current role, trends they've been seeing, and their vision for the future, personally, professionally, and otherwise. This podcast is made for people who are seeing how quickly the digital business landscape is evolving. Those who recognize that it takes a village of trusted advisors to navigate this ever-changing terrain. People who enjoy listening to high-level discussions surrounding what it means to be a leader, real-world examples of challenges faced, and industry-specific strategies leveraged to create exceptional business outcomes. This episode is brought to you by Disruptive Innovations, a leading tech consulting firm that helps enterprise organizations with their IT strategy, process optimization, and workflow improvement. Contact them and find out more at disruptiveinnovations.net.
Good afternoon, friends, or good morning, depending on where you're tuning in from. David Wright here, and I am your host of the Disruptive Innovators, Champions of Digital Business podcast, and the new boomstick here that I just set up. So I'm lucky enough today to be joined by my friend, Carl Gofian. Carl, I know we were chatting, we had sought you out, long track record of success as a enterprise CIO. Got your hands on a lot of things right now, but for any of our listeners who aren't familiar with yourself or your background, maybe you just introduce yourself and a little bit about what you're up to now.
Sure. I have been a CIO at Gainsight for the last 7 years and just left this year because I wanted to shift to more of a part-time working situation. And it's going really well. I'm actually advising a lot of companies right now. I'm involved with a bunch of startups, which I hadn't really necessarily expected. I thought I might be doing more sort of fractional CIO enterprise work, but actually the people who really have sought me out have been startups who are trying to understand better how they can connect with the CIO community. A lot of the startups are started by brilliant product people, but they're not necessarily sure how to go talk to a CIO about this wonderful thing that they've built. But my background is longtime IT practitioner and executive. And I think we have a little bit of a similar background in having maybe started early. I was literally a teenager and into technology and started as a hobbyist and it became a career. So that's my background, including in my 20s, having set up a small services company and going out and building custom applications and solutions for clients. So a varied background, but you really in all aspects of IT. I started early enough that in those days, you had to do everything. Things weren't as specialized. So I was my own programmer and business analyst and project manager and DBA and systems administrator, right? But I feel sort of lucky actually to have had that experience because later on as a CIO, it's not like there's some aspect of IT that you can say, well, I don't really know that. You need to kind of understand everything.
And I think it allows you to have like empathy and connection with those that are in those roles, right? I did start early with the building computers, the fairly ethical hacking, the, you know, local area networks at a friend's house, all of that. And then early on in my career, I found myself crawling through ceiling ducts and placing APs and trying to find ways through brick walls and cemetery and funeral homes that weren't really meant to be businesses and just like all sorts of fun things that you cut your teeth on, right?
It's just interesting that you mentioned empathy. I actually think that's an underrated thing in business and in leadership. And you don't have to have actually done that thing to have that empathy. It helps. it sort of jumpstarts. But I think that no matter what you're doing as a leader, everybody in your organization should feel like you have some appreciation for what they do. I actually think one of the worst things that you can see in terms of management or leadership are people down in the trenches working really hard and feeling like the people above them actually have no idea what they're doing or care or appreciate how hard it is. So I love the fact that you brought that word empathy into it, because that's the kind of thing that sometimes people think this is all technical and mechanical, but it's the human piece that makes leadership actually work.
100%. And my wheels are turning right now. So one thing I don't want to lose, and you started off the episode with, you know, the fact that you're advising these startups, and we've seen a number of CIOs trending in that direction as you guys have had successful careers. You can do something where maybe you're spending more time with your family, maybe you're traveling a little bit, like whatever, you're just building a life that was more flexible and composable. But I think it's really valuable to these product-led, founder-driven companies that may or may not have the same social skills that an executive like you has ideally developed. And clearly yourself, you have. I think CIOs and other executives have to varying degrees, right? Just like any human. And also, like, I think about like Apple when I think customer experience, right? And like backing into what the customer wants versus just banging them on the head with your product and being like, this is great. Like, don't you know it's great? And I think how better to do that than with someone like you at your side. So it's just great that they're taking advantage of that experience.
And more broadly, I think more and more businesses are realizing that the CIO is a great asset to them, and they should make better use of this person who in the past may have just been the back office applications person or something like that.
You're right. I agree 100%. And this kind of dovetails into my second thought, right? Where, yes, I agree. And if I'm a CIO at an organization, I can't be the executive that has a chip on his shoulder or her shoulder because I've been siloed for all those years. Like, I, in my experience, right, like, sometimes they might not even realize. Sometimes it might just be about good communication, right? If I'm not getting what I want from the situation, how am I making those moves to make that connection? Because furthermore, what we're seeing is the pace at which we're looking to innovate and just the gravity of the innovation that's in front of us nowadays requires a great deal of human connection, empathy, we mentioned, organizational change management more than ever before, right? It's crazy. And in that vein, we've actually seen in some cases almost like operational stakeholders taking more control of technology and IT coming in as a supporting role, almost like advising or propping up those people, which is fine because they're our customers anyway, right? As long as the ship's going in the right direction, like, we don't need the glory. But at the same time, you could attack that from different angles, like depending on the organization and the structure.
But it's just a very interesting time to me. Yeah, I've been having this kind of conversation with a lot of folks.
Part of this is something that's been going on a long time. I mean, really, with SaaS, you started to see more and more business departments doing their own thing, right? They bring in their own software, they run it themselves. Sometimes they have technical resources, sometimes they don't. And so already we had been in this mode of IT becoming more and more of a facilitator than necessarily the owner of everything. And that role actually becomes almost even more important when things are scattered around the organization. That coordination becomes even more important, and nothing in the company is siloed. The fact is, this department can solve their problem, that department can solve their problem. But if you look at something like a quote to cash process, there's maybe a dozen different departments, systems, processes that all have to work in concert to have a coherent business. And who the heck in the company owns making sure that all hangs together? In most companies, it's IT, because there isn't a chief process officer. which is a phrase, by the way, that people were throwing around a long time ago, saying that's what the CIO really is, your chief process officer. That phrase never took off, but I never stopped feeling that it was true. And in a world where now AI is almost even just amping up that ability for individual groups and now individual people to do whatever they need to do to get their job done, the coordination of all those things just becomes exponentially more important. Otherwise, everybody's happy in their little world, but nothing works in the company.
It's funny, a colleague of mine at Cleveland Clinic, she's heading up some of their AI programs and she does a podcast. I'll have to drop the episode in the comments, but she was talking about there was recently a Harvard study, something that was saying that like 95% of AI POCs aren't returning the ROI that people expect or something provocative like that. But she went on to talk about the fact that, for example, if I'm using ChatGPT and 11 Labs and Canva and Suno for audio, like I'm using all these AI tools personally and it's in my little world, I'm getting a ton of ROI, right? It's working well. But as these apps become distributed within an organization that needs to work as a unit, if there's an expectation that's going to yield something, like everybody just randomly using Copilot or something, like it's not it, right?
Yeah. I actually think this is the biggest challenge facing CIOs right now, is the gap between AI hype and AI reality. But that doesn't mean that the hype isn't true. It just means that the expectations are crazy. So the problem is some CEO or some board of directors reads an article and it says you can take 20% of your G&A cost out with AI. And they say, okay, so where is it? I want to build a financial model that I want that money out of the system now. And the fact that AI is an amazing, powerful, transformational technology does not mean that's going to translate into, frankly, you can fire a bunch of people quickly or not hire a bunch of people. I feel like there's a lot of people who are dancing around this and they're trying to make it sound better than it is. But when a CEO says, I want to take 20% of my G&A cost out, they're talking about firing people. Let's face it, that means less people doing the same stuff. You can try and make that sound better than it is and say, well, they'll do more higher value things and uh-huh. But at the end of the day, I just feel like that's what a lot of people are really looking for. And that's going to take a while. And I'm not sure what the ultimate impact will be in that kind of hard ROI dollar measurable way. And so CIOs are really stuck in between, right? They're being asked to do amazing hard stuff, but the reality of it is it's harder than it looks.
No, absolutely. And Carl, what you're talking about, we see it too. And I'm going to give this keynote in London in a few weeks. And you're reminding me about some stuff. I'm like preparing my thoughts. And one of the things that I'm going to talk about dovetails into what we were talking about before with the connection piece and the organizational change management piece. And like the fact that, so like I think about this line and like above the line, you know, we have our technology stack, right? And we're very focused in customer experience related technologies more so than security or other aspects of the technology stack. But it applies to all of it in that surely when we're engaging, we're looking at how are we maximizing investments in the technology platforms that we're already invested all in on, minimizing points of failure, evaluating best of breed, perhaps AI solutions where appropriate without ending up with all these different point solutions. But then below the line, we have to think really long and hard about how are we operationalizing these technologies, right? Because here we have workflows and processes that have been developed per the old technologies that these folks had available to them. Just unplugging, you know, what we were doing from an old technology platform and trying to plug it into AI is not it, right? So we really have to take that whole process, throw it up against the wall. And oh, by the way, we need to be doing this with these stakeholders, right? So we need to be having these conversations with these stakeholders about what the opportunities are, what their biggest pain points are. And it is a tedious and grassroots effort, because if I'm ultimately going to look to call on them a month later, 2 weeks later, you know, whatever, to be enrolled in a process where we're evaluating how we might be able to do this differently, and I'm asking them to change. Nobody likes change, right? But they might, almost like they think that it's their idea, right? Like, oh, you heard me. I felt seen in that moment. And now you're acting on what I said. Wow, that's cool.
Exactly. I mean, look, that's always been true. There's no transformational project that can be successful if the business is not fully bought in. You can build it, but they will not necessarily come. So you'd better have full alignment. And by the way, again, to the earlier point, a big part of what CIOs do is to build the alignment of different stakeholders. So it's not just a question of, does this particular business leader support this change in their group? It's how do you get these five business leaders to all agree to something that's going to change all of their worlds, and then it's going to change this end-to-end process. That is the art of this business.
Especially when there's warring factions or they seeming divisiveness and vision.
Yeah, absolutely. Tricky. And by the way, sometimes those tensions are really kind of political, or their ego or whatever. Sometimes they're completely legitimate, right? So one of the things you learn in this business, I'm sure with the work you do, you see this too, you've got to be careful not to overreact in either direction, right? To assume someone is resisting this change for not a good reason, or to assume that they're always resisting it for a good reason. I think you've got to truly listen to them and truly understand what their concerns are. Comes back to, I feel like maybe the theme of this conversation may be empathy, but I think that's really what it comes down to, is if you're trying to just cram something through, in my experience, I don't see those projects generally being very successful.
Yeah. And you remind me just of a quick thing, like for my colleagues as who are advisors in the industry, how like you get an email from a customer, enterprise customer, your best customer, and they say, this is awful. We have this issue. It's unacceptable. What the hell? And you get that email and you're like, oh my God, vendor X, I'm getting this email. What's going on? Like, how could you do this? Like, you said this was taken care of. Meanwhile, vendor X says, David, yes, but you know, we asked for XYZ deliverable 3 weeks ago. They didn't give it to us. And oh, by the way, this person was supposed to do this. And so in that like same vein, like there's two sides to every story. And like in that example, like one of the things that I've had to learn is restrain a pen and tongue, right? So just like there's very few situations that I have to react like immediately, right? As IT stewards, we often have to act with urgency. I'm not like denying that at all. But in the same vein, sometimes the best action, at least in a given moment in time, is no action, so that I can get the perspective I need to react appropriately.
Exactly. Our job is to remain calm. Our job is not to become yet another emotional actor in that moment. It is exactly our job to calm everybody down, say, let's fully understand what's really going on here before we jump around and start taking actions, and develop a plan and then go execute the plan. I really think that's an probably underrated value that we bring to our organizations.
It's huge. So one of the biggest enemies of, and I know we're bouncing all over the place here, but I like it. One of the biggest enemies of innovation, and I've probably talked about this before and in something that I've done, but that we've seen, is a culture of fear. And what I mean by that is, be it in IT and digital, or even like some of the more dramatic examples I've seen have been on the operations side, where you have a leader at a high enough level in an enterprise. So call it like VP, senior VP of a large organization, seemingly potentially thousands of people under that individual in varying departments, who leads by a culture of fear in that like everything is urgent and they need it yesterday. And like, why isn't it done already? And like, things are flying at them seemingly from the top, right? And they are blasting off emails. Tom just emailed me, like he needs the report by Friday and it's Thursday at 5 o'clock. And then they tell their people, oh my God, John just emailed me. We need this like yesterday. And like, that just trickles downhill. And then as IT and digital stewards, we come in and we try to introduce a project or something that'll make everyone's life easier. And maybe they're even excited about it, right? At the prospect, but to dismantle that culture of fear, because what we see is that people get afraid to make little decisions because they're afraid of getting banged with the stick. So they're trepidatious and they're wondering like, all right, can I do this? Am I going to be okay? And that inaction, like innovation requires little mistakes oftentimes in a controlled environment such that we can iterate, improve, and move forward, right? But if people are afraid to make the little mistake and they just delay that couple days, either the projects, like they end up stretching out ad infinitum and fizzle out, or all sorts of things we see can happen unless you really stem that off. And it's not a technology issue. It's a leadership. It's a, you know, emotional intelligence issue, really.
Absolutely. You know? The other thing about that culture of a fear is that it's a very reactive culture. And it's very hard to pull your head up and be more strategic when you're in that reactive mindset.
I know that myself, right? Like I've struggled with that as an entrepreneur where you're trying to make it happen and you're in it. And it's funny, sometimes on vacation, I'll realize like until you're in pain, because like a lot of the startups and stuff, they'll hire a lot of people and then they'll be underwater. And it's one of the bigger enemies to growth. But at the same time, I need to be able to, like you said, have the foresight to think strategically. And it's hard to do if you're in that reactive mode. Absolutely. So Carl, we talked about a lot of good stuff. One question I always like to ask, so you were at Gainsight for a number of years in that CIO position and a number of other positions throughout your career. Is there a time that sticks out in your mind as a moment that you either had a project fail or you had something that happened to you personally or, you know, anything like that, but that you ultimately took away a profound lesson? And the reason I ask that is because for me, my professional development has been made up of these seemingly slight perspective shifts through time that have amounted to, when I look back, like I was over there and now I'm over here. And it's not like I've arrived, but I can see the difference in how I look at things. And there's definitely a few moments where I was like, I had to take a step back and be like, oh, wow, this is not it. Is there anything that sticks out in your mind in your career, like that you might want to share with everybody?
For sure, the biggest mistakes I ever made were exactly when I did get caught up in the emotion of a situation and lost my cool. It doesn't happen very often, but it has. And it, when it does, it's usually a pretty spectacular failure that you look back on and you cringe every time you think about it. But I also think just in terms of the learnings, I don't know that there necessarily have been big dramatic things. But in general, I think that doing a lot of different kinds of jobs and working my way up from very much a practitioner through different levels of leadership to a very high level of leadership has really given me a lot of perspective that when you're earlier in your career, you're imagining what your boss is thinking, but you don't know really until you're there. I think you probably have the opportunity to understand it better if you try. And I think that's probably something I would have done better if I had to do it over again. But I also think sometimes it's hard to learn stuff without having the experience. And again, it comes back to that empathy idea that you need to be able to understand. So we were talking earlier about IT leaders having a seat at the table and driving things in the way that they think they should go. But I think sometimes there's a lack of empathy or understanding of how things look from the point of view of the CEO. And it's interesting because I had this realization recently, or at least had the ability to articulate it better, which is that someone down in a department is a practitioner. They're trying to solve a problem. So let's say you're in security and you say, hey, we have this security vulnerability and here's a product. We should buy it because it'll address this problem. And it's a real problem. So from your point of view, you think, why can't we just go do that? Like, I told you we have a problem. Here's a solution. We should go solve this problem, huh? The problem is there are 100 of those across the company and we can only afford 10 of them. So I get it. Your thing's super important. I'm not saying it's not important, but you've got to have the perspective and the maturity, frankly, to understand, hey, it's not that simple. And I think it's also an important perspective that every one of the departments in a company will tell you, we're the most important one. Hey, I'm security. Security, the whole company goes down. Accounting is like, hey, if we don't do our job, we don't get any money. We don't collect money from people. We're out of business. Sales is like, you can all talk all you want, but if we don't sell it, nothing's happening. We're gone. Engineering is like, hey, yeah, but you got nothing to sell without us. They each think they're the most important. And here's the epiphany. They're all right. They are all correct. They are all existential, super important. But there's a bunch of them. And so the reality of leadership of a company is having the perspective to understand that it's all about prioritization. It's not about, is this thing important? Of course it's important. I'm not questioning your judgment about whether this is a true security vulnerability or whether that's the best answer for it. That's not the point. But when you're down in the weeds and you're the practitioner, that is the point to you. So for you to have more perspective and appreciation for what's happening 3-4 layers above you and the kind of decisions and prioritizations that have to happen, I think is really important. And when people say, I want my career to move forward, I want to move to that next promotion, I want to be a leader someday, that's a big part of the trick of it, is being able to do that. And actually, I'll give you a very practical thing around that as an example. I think we're both podcast people, and I think you're probably always looking for good podcast recommendations. And the one that I'm really loving right now is called Not Another CEO Podcast. There's also a website and there's a weekly email that actually is really good. And the content is just excellent. But I also think it's a good example of, if you're a CIO, if you really want to learn, then read some of the content that's meant for CEOs. And if you're a practitioner down in the IT organization, but you have ambition, listen to CIO podcasts. Try and understand the world from that other point of view. That, I think, has really been a key learning for me.
You nailed it. Like, trying to understand the world from someone else's view is what I heard. And like, it's just so crucial, because I mean, I love how you talked about like sales and security and this, and they all are integral. In my experience, there's oftentimes solutions and or prioritization that, if positioned appropriately, can serve all the groups simultaneously, even potentially, like certain solutions. Or once I understand their perspective and appreciate their perspective, and they feel that I appreciate their perspective, when I understand them and appreciate and et cetera, and then I say, so that makes sense to me. And Carl, the reason that we need to prioritize X is because ultimately, you know, it's going to serve you in this way. And they've felt, heard, and seen and understand. And then you go down that logic path, and then they're like, okay, you know what? That does make sense. And yes, and we're going to get to your thing too, but this is why we're prioritizing. So I think, again, it goes back to empathy, communication, and these things are just indispensable as technology leaders, right? I think even in the CIO or CTO position for a long time, they weren't necessarily requirements historically, right? And I've seen the best leaders in the last 10, 15 years in particular, really grow into those qualities. And I've seen others not do as good a job. And I see what that has done to certain organizations, right? I'm just glad we're in the dialogue about it because I think it's worth talking about. We got a little time left, Carl. One of the questions I like to ask all my guests is just a favorite book, or you did bring up one of your podcasts that you've been listening to recently. So we'll definitely add that in the comments and references. But any other recommendations? I like to build my book list and my podcast list that this
I'm trying to work my way through a book that I read a very long time ago called Gödel, Escher, and Bach, which is about AI, but it was written a long time ago. But I have to tell you that a lot of what I think and understand about AI comes from that book. And so I'm going back to it right now and enjoying it. So that's one. Actually, I'll tell you about another thing that I went back to that is an old science fiction movie called Colossus, The Forbin Project. And it's hard to find because it's not streaming. Like I literally pulled out my old player so I could watch it. But it's really fascinating to see a movie that imagined AI in the future and got some things remarkably right. It's interesting too, based after having our conversation, the movie is as much about the human dynamics around it as it is the technology, because that's always what actually drives things. Anyway, it's an odd but a fun recommendation.
I'm going to have to check it out now. I love stuff like that. A couple questions left for you, Carl. One would be, you have the benefit of nowadays working with a number of different organizations and your role at Ramp CIO and your advisory roles. What's one of the biggest themes that you're hearing from CIOs or business owners today? I mean, we may have touched on it briefly already.
I think a lot of angst around sky-high expectations versus what it means to really measurably impact the business. That's the other thing is, there's no question AI is already having a lot of impact. The question is, can I put an ROI number around it? So someone has a ChatGPT account and they use it and it helps them do their job every day. But where does that show up? And that's always been a challenge with a lot of the things we do, frankly. Where does the ROI of spreadsheets show up? I don't know, but I don't think anyone would question, are they adding a lot of value? Are they adding a lot of productivity? So I think that's a real challenge, especially in environments where some organizations are saying, we're going to freeze headcount on the assumption that AI is just going to make everybody more productive. That's a little scary because I don't know that I can't wave a magic wand here. And again, I think AI has this quality of it demos well, and there are some wildly successful use cases. And I think the combination of those two things, people extrapolate farther than maybe they should. So they say, you can do a really great level one chatbot using these new LLM technologies, and you don't need as many level one people. So you can either move them to level two, or you can move them to different parts of the organization, or you can fire them and save money. Therefore, if I don't need so many L1 support analysts, why do I need so many accountants? Or why do I need so many salespeople? Or why do I need so many business analysts? But that's not actually a fair extrapolation. It misunderstands the nature of different jobs having different kinds of work that needs to be done, some of which are really well suited to a large language model. By the way, the word language right there in it, if it's a language heavy job, then LLMs may be able to help you a lot. If it's a numbers heavy job, it may or may not be able to help you a lot. So extrapolating from, I saw this great demo, or I talked to ChatGPT, I asked this question and it gave me a great answer, so therefore it can give me a great answer to any question. That's not a correct extrapolation, but it's a very human nature thing to see that and say, oh, if it can do this, it can do that. And I think we're all struggling with that tension of expectations that are just not necessarily realistic in the short term. Longer term, absolutely. I don't know where this whole thing's going, but it's just going to keep getting better and better. But to expect immediate hard ROI from AI is putting pressure on a lot of business leaders in IT and outside of IT. A lot of people are coming to their CIOs and they're saying, my boss is telling me I need to see efficiency gains. I need to see cost savings from AI. Can you help me? And as you were saying earlier, that's a lot of the job of the CIO now is to support all of those business folks because people are coming to them and saying, help. And people are having to work together. IT should be partnering with the business groups to say, how do we work together to figure out what we can do short-term, mid-term, long-term, and how can we articulate that in a way to maybe give us the breathing room to actually go execute.
I wish we had more time. I mean, Carl, this is great, great stuff. Last final question I'd like to end on is just if you could go back in time 5, 10, 15 years, what advice would you give your younger self?
So the biggest thing that I tell everyone is when I became a CIO, I discovered the CIO network. I became part of a network of CIOs. And that network is really amazing. It's really excellent. And I never really understood networking. Networking felt to me like this sort of phony thing. And so I just didn't get it. And once you're in a great network of people who trust each other, who get to know each other, who help each other, who share things like, hey, has anyone faced this problem? Oh, yes, I have. This is what I did. It worked. Or I did this and it didn't work. Don't do that. It's unbelievably valuable. I could not do the job of CIO myself. I could not do it literally without my network. So when I talk to people now, I say, listen, CIOs, to some extent, those networks, vendors help us create them. They call events. They give us opportunities to get together. But you got to find your tribe. So whatever level you're at, trust me, if you find other people who are doing what you're doing and you connect with them, whether it's in person or on Slack or wherever, on Teams, whatever group there is out there, your life will be better. Believe me. So that was a big learning for me. And it's something that I always urge people. If they don't have a group somewhere, if they don't have that, go find it. And by the way, if it doesn't exist, create it. It's so easy now. If you go into one of these platforms like meetup.com and you say, I'm a whatever, and it can be very specific. I'm an IT person who does this particular thing. Anybody else do that? I'm calling a lunch. I'm going to be there. I'm going to be at this place at this time. Anyone who wants to be there, sign up. You'd be amazed. And the thing is, all you have to do is find one or two people, and then they'll find one or two people more. And the next thing you know, you've got a group. So saying, oh, well, there's no group where I am, or there's no group for the particular thing that I do, go create one.
It was one of the best things I ever did with Disruptive Innovators was to create this community. One of the biggest benefits is getting insight from guys like yourself. Like the things that I've been able to learn from doing this work, from doing our events, from building this network have been invaluable. So it's just a great piece of advice to end with. And Carl, thank you so much for being on. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Yeah, it's been great.
And to our listeners, thank you all for tuning in. And we will catch you all next week.
Thank you for listening to the Disruptive Innovators Champions of Digital Business podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a 5-star review and subscribe to enjoy future episodes. This episode is brought to you by Disruptive Innovations, a leading tech consulting firm that helps enterprise organizations with their IT strategy, process optimization, and workflow improvement. Contact them and find out more at disruptiveinnovations.net.